Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. I am Ryan McPherson alongside my co-host today, Lee Cantor. We're very excited to tell you that we've got a great show lineup in studio here today. But before we get started, let's remind you to make sure you're following us on social media at Business Radio X. And today we're using the hashtag Atlanta Business Radio. And please like our Facebook page, leave your thoughts and comments there, and also see all the photos of our in-studio guest. And now here is the incomparable Lee Cantor.
So, how are you doing, Ryan?
Excellent. This is
how was your holiday? I haven't seen you. I've been away.
It was unbelievable. Santa was so good to me. My family was so wonderful this holiday season, full of cheer and good food, and ready to get back to work in 2016.
Now, I had the chance to go down to Florida. I went to the Keys, and we did something fun as a family. We had a quest.
Quests
are important, you know.
They are. What was on this quest?
The best key lime pie.
Ah, and did you find it?
We're still looking.
I know of a place in Isla Mirada down in Isla
Mirada.
That
was one of the places we went. So what place?
Well, now you had to ask me, right?
I did. We went to a place called the Fish House.
Okay.
And they had a very good, but they had meringue.
Key lime
meringue.
I don't know
if I'm on board with meringue as part of a key lime pie.
All right. I'll do a little research on that spot, and I'll get back to you, and we'll help you with this quest for the best key lime pie in the world.
So who do we have today?
Today we have several guests, but right out of the gate, we have Brian Miles and Shannon Miles. They are with a company called EA Help.
Well, welcome, guys.
Thank you.
EA Help, can you share a little bit? What are you guys up to?
Yeah, we're a virtual executive assistant firm, so we source EAs around the country.
EA, executive assistant.
Sorry.
Right?
Yeah. EA, VA, interchangeable. With busy leaders who are out of time, can't get to all their emails and tasks. We come alongside them and give them their time back.
Now, how did this come about? Were either of you virtual assistants?
No.
Or needed a virtual assistant?
We would make terrible assistants.
That's true.
I was working at a Fortune 15 company for about 10 years and worked in different aspects of that business. So from legal to sales to project management, and it was time to make a big career switch. We had always wanted to have something of our own, didn't know exactly what that might be. And at the same time, Brian was sort of reaching a crossroads in his career as well. And I'll let him share that with you.
Yeah. So my, how we got started with our virtual assistant business really dated back 7 years. I had a virtual assistant in Charlotte and I managed a sales team of about 10 guys and $40 million in sales. And it was complex construction and renovation projects. And I just realized that she was 4 hours from me and it just worked really well for 7 years. So I knew that there was a model that was out there. And then the industry as a whole started to really kind of heat up in 2010. And we just decided this would be a really good market to try and pursue. And we learned through that we had some good best practices to share and it worked out.
And then, so when you were starting out, what was the biggest challenge? Was it the getting the virtual assistants or getting people to trust the virtual assistants?
I think, you know, the industry has matured in the last 5 years. It was definitely in its infancy then. So that it was really a mind shift for the prospect to go, can I really do this with a virtual employee? Can I trust them? Today, I think we're more virtual than ever. And so it's really, you know, we FaceTime, we send emails off into the universe. I mean, we just, you know, we're so virtual already. So now it's a very doable thing. So the conversations, the sales conversations early on in our business were more about, you need to try this versus today. It's like, okay, I just need to make sure I can do this for our business and it, you know, matches our budget.
Now, how do you kind of match make the right assistant with the right client? Because I would think that that's one of the challenges, at least in the mind of a client.
It is a challenge. It's our special sauce, though. I mean, I think that's truly one of the things that sets us apart. We go through a very extensive vetting process for all the candidates that come to us who want to be virtual assistants.
Do you have a lot? So it's more candidates than you can?
Yeah.
We bring on 1% to 3% of the applicants.
Wow. So they're coming out of the woodwork to wanting to be a virtual assistant.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it provides a great lifestyle for them. You know, they have the ability to use their minds, their intellect, their past business experience, but they don't have to go into an office 40 hours a week and stay on the road for 2 hours a day.
Right.
So I mean, it's a really good opportunity for somebody who's looking for this, you know, unicorn of work-life balance. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we put them through a very rigorous vetting process before we even talk to them. There's some information that they have to fill out that lets us know that they're a potential good fit. And then we go through testing and a series of...
So you do assessments?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, because, you know, you look at a resume and it can look amazing.
It always does.
It always looks great, right? That's your best...
Well, that's an easy red flag, you know, typos, problems like that. Then they're probably out at go, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, we have a talent acquisition team and we're actively going through 500, 600 resumes a month that we get. And so for us, it's... we had to be smart about how we filter through those folks. Mm-hmm. We're paying attention to things that they probably don't even realize that have nothing to do with resume.
Right.
Yeah. So that's one side of it, right? It's, you know, making sure you have good qualified virtual assistants. And then the other side is making sure you have good potential clients. You know, not all prospects are going to be great clients.
Right.
So we're very selective about who we bring on board from that side as well, because we want a good partner. We want somebody who's going to stay for a while and really lean into the coaching that we provide as a company too. So we gather all the information we can in the beginning and take that information to a team that considers all different aspects. You know, what is the client looking for? What's the availability of the assistant? What's the skill set needed? Technology, all these things come together and we say, all right, this is the best virtual assistant for you. And we kick them off and go from there.
And then your service goes a little bit beyond that as well, because don't you put like an account person on that?
Mm-hmm.
Not yeah, just we have the assistant, right?
Yeah, we realized early on in our industry that most organizations, they just took a virtual assistant and paired them with the client and hoped for the best. And we thought, well, that can't work. And so we doubled down. We've invested heavily in relationship management. Mm-hmm. So it's another layer of care for our customer where they can lean into them as a trusted advisor and say, hey, you know, how you've got, you know, 50, 60 customers just like me. How in the world is this work? And then we're, you know, very proactive in offering ideas and suggestions for the virtual assistant to work well. And then we follow a very similar model for the Satmetrics,
client satisfaction.
Yeah, client mm-hmm. sat, but the Satmetrics score. Mm-hmm. So we work really hard to make sure that we're staying on top of that, because we know that happy clients do really good things for us in the market.
That's mm-hmm. right. Now, what is the profile of the virtual assistant? Is it who we think it is? Like somebody that maybe is it mostly women? I would
mostly know. Women.
Is mm-hmm. it, what's the ratio of that? Like 80-20?
It's shockingly high.
100%.
We've tried.
I'll tell you, I'll just be very honest. Yeah. Guys typically do not serve well. And I'm just being very brutally honest. Mm-hmm. And and just the nature of the business is that, you know, there's a lot of people that want work-life balance. So we do target college-educated stay-at-home moms.
So now, is this college-educated stay-at-home mom somebody who has previous experience, now has a kid, and now wants to still kind of maybe make some revenue, but cares more about flexibility and working around their schedule?
I would say a lot of them fit that profile. Yeah. You know, we also are getting a lot of women who have retired, but mm-hmm. still want to
kind of still stay connected.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So it's, you know, while it is primarily women, there are a lot of different skill sets and backgrounds and past work and ministry experience that play into the demographic.
And then, so how do you find them?
Mostly friends and family, word of mouth.
So it's just kind of organically grown mm-hmm. over the years. Like, oh, I got a cousin in Wichita that might be a good fit. And then they send them your way?
A lot of it has been that. I think we were just naive enough in the beginning when we started 5 years ago to think, I know some stay-at-home moms. This
How hard could it be?
Why, yeah. why would this not work?
Our well ran out pretty quick.
Yeah. But, you know, once somebody finds something that they love mm-hmm. and that they're passionate about, they tell people.
Sure.
You know, and they want to bring on friends and family that they feel like EA Help could benefit as well. And so it spreads organically through there. But we're very protective of our culture. And even though somebody has referred to us that, you know, is from an existing assistant or even somebody from our corporate team, we still rigorously put them through the process to make sure
that the process is still there no matter what.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, what has been one of the surprises for you of getting into this? You started it, like you said, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. What are some of the kind of unexpected things that have occurred
I'm surprised by the amount of industries that have adopted our business model. meaning, you know, when we first started, we were really just working with pastors in the United States. And that was one very tiny vertical.
Right.
And now we're in 30 plus verticals, you know, from manufacturing to healthcare to, you know, attorneys.
So you started out just looking for pastors mm-hmm. that needed some extra help.
Yeah, because right. that's where I came out of. I used to build and renovate churches. Mm-hmm. So I knew tons of pastors all over the United States. And so for us, it was very easy to kind of go after them because they knew us and I knew them. But then about 6 months in, we had a fairly influential blogger approach us and say, you know, I want your service. And then he mentioned it barely and every vertical in the world just showed up. And yeah. we just expanded overnight.
And then so then you started tapping into bloggers. I guess that was a yeah. vertical.
Yeah. I mean, our business model has always been to qualify those that come to us. We're not great cold callers and we don't want to, you know, bang about a bunch of pots and pans. We really want to talk to qualified people that have an interest in us. And mm-hmm. so we've invested heavily in a sales team that knows that and is very relational. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of influential people out there that the minute they blog something, it becomes evergreen and it right. sticks out there for a long time. And you know, fortunately, there's links in there to our company that they continued to
yeah.
get us to our site.
Google is forever.
Yeah. they, or so they think. Yeah.
So now that you've been doing it for 5 years, how has it grown in kind of unexpected ways? Like you mentioned, you started out in one kind of niche and now you've expanded mm-hmm. to 30. Has it gone beyond?
It's gone beyond, you know, industry type and it's gone beyond size. You know, I thought at first it would just be, you know, a smaller organization, maybe a solopreneur who literally had reached the limit of her abilities.
Right.
But now it's large corporations who just don't have good solutions for the administrative work that's needed.
Right.
And that has surprised me a lot. You know, it's
because
it's
a lot
size.
Of these larger companies downsize mm-hmm. and they're the first to go, but the work's still there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you can be limited by the resources in your geographic proximity, but mm-hmm. in a virtual world, it doesn't matter if right. your assistant is in Omaha or Atlanta.
Now, is the assistant kind of job description kind of expanded from assistant to maybe project manager?
That's a great point. Yeah, that has changed in the business as well.
Or you know, maybe that's just semantics, right? Because they're doing similar tasks.
Yeah, you know, but there's a target to project management too that's a little bit more sophisticated than just, you know, completing this task that involved a lot of different components that look right. like a project. So yeah, we started out just doing traditional virtual assistant services of email management, right. calendar, travel, things like that. Now we offer social media assistance because, you know, that's changed a lot in the last right. 5 years, as you know. And we're beta testing project management as well as a specific offering, not just a add-on to what an assistant already does, but it is a more sophisticated method of supporting somebody virtually when there's a project management focus to it. So we're working on that as well.
So now can you share a little bit about some of the tasks? Like you mentioned some of them, like it started out as scheduling, you know, travel, things like that. Mm-hmm. How, like when you're going into, like walk me through, like say I want to hire you and I'm new, I've never done this before. Like, can you share what that onboarding is for me as the client?
Yes, absolutely. So after you know, go through the sales cycle and we decide you like us, we like you, let's go forward together. We have that kickoff that I mentioned earlier, which mm-hmm. is where the relationship manager, so the account manager that you mentioned.
Who isn't the person doing
who
the
is
task.
Not the virtual assistant.
Right.
That
different.
Is that is a person with EA Help.
Right. So this is a different skill set. Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They've probably never been a virtual assistant right. before, but they work with each one of them has about 50 to 60 clients and assistants that they
and their clients are with. The assistants?
No, that's both and.
Okay.
So yeah. So that relationship manager facilitates a kickoff call with the executive assistant and the client mm-hmm. where we all meet each other, set expectations, you know, what are the top five things that we need to focus on right away? Because, you know, we get leaders who have a list of 20 things they right. need help with, but the reality
it's
is
infinite.
Yeah, let's
and if
start
they
somewhere.
Read a new book, it could be three
yeah.
more, right?
Yeah.
Or the Scott Miles magazine on the way home.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's be realistic about, you know, what we need to focus on in the first 30, 60, 90 days to really show some quick wins and mm-hmm. set the EA up for success and really have some tangible wins for the client.
Right.
So you know, we sort of take it from there. If the client has done this before and they
let's
know,
assume they've never done this.
Let's assume they've
let's
never done
blank
it.
Blank page. This is new to me. I've never had an assistant. And now, you know, I heard about you guys. I heard you're awesome.
what do we do now? Right.
I got a list, like you said, of 100 things that are, that have been on my, either my wish list. I wish I can get to this, but I'm just so focused on, you know, putting out fires. I never got a chance.
Well, what Shannon said is a big part of the early days is defining what's mission critical versus nice to have. And the relationship manager does a good job to sort that out, working with the virtual assistant and being candid with you, because candidly, some of the things that may be on that list are very time involved. And just setting the right expectation for how to execute on that is very important, and saying, hey, you know, we can do this and we can put this at the top of the mission critical list. You just need to know this is how long this is going to take based on our experience.
Is that something that the client doesn't always understand, is how long things take?
Yeah. I mean, candidly, what we found is that most clients, they'll think in their mind, because a lot of leaders are like this, that, you know, something should take 30 minutes. And they'll think that in their mind, and then they'll expect someone to do it in 30 minutes. But the reality is they can never do it in 30 minutes. It'd take them 4 hours in reality. And so, you know, it's one of those things, is just helping them set right expectations. And that's why we're really adamant about finding the right customer that will trust us, because we're going to speak into their life for delegation and say, hey, we've done this. Trust us. We've seen this type of work before, and it's going to take a while.
Right.
And then, you know, going through that, they build a very seamless relationship. It's, you know, our whole goal is to kind of move back and then check in periodically. But in the early days, we're right there step by step with our relationship manager and the virtual assistant.
So now when they're working through the process and they think like, okay, like, let's take some of the social media. I want you to tweet for me, right? Is that some of the things that they ask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then now the assistant is like, sure. Right. It's always yes, right? Some version of yes. And then, so then they're like, well, what do you want me to tweet? Right now, that goes back to the client, has to give them something to say.
Yeah.
Right.
We encourage frequent and open communication between the assistant and the client. We never want to have to sit in the middle all the time.
Right.
It's just not an efficient way to work.
So you want to set the process and then let them go at it.
Absolutely.
And then get a stand back.
Right? You know, one of our best practices that we recommend is a weekly video chat between the assistant and the client.
And this 5 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, whatever.
Whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I have a virtual assistant too. We practice what we preach.
Right.
I always come to my weekly call with my assistant with a list of things that I want to go over with her. But inevitably, I'm seeing her, I'm talking to her, and I think of five more things that I need help with. So whatever works for that leader and that assistant, it's just the habit of having that weekly touch point at a minimum. I mean, especially in the beginning, there's a ton of training that needs to go on. The assistant needs to learn your work style, your organization, the other people they're going to be interacting with. So how's she going to know what to tweet unless you tell her?
Right.
Got to tell her. You know?
Yeah. I think the other thing too is, I think the word assistant sometimes is a disservice to the actual virtual assistant role. The best clients we see, they actually see this virtual assistant as their work alongside partner. They don't see them as just some robot off in a corner that's just going to do tasks for them. They see them as someone that's going to be an extension of who they are.
Right.
And so when they kind of make that shift mentally, it works. And there's just an instant click. And sometimes it takes a client 9 months, and sometimes it takes them one day. You know, and they're increasing hours right after the kickoff call, because they get it. Like, oh, wow, this person's here to really extend who I am as a leader.
Now, you mentioned a kind of a pro tip is having this weekly check-in meeting.
Video call.
So video is more important than a call, phone call?
Yeah, must. Yeah.
It makes all the difference.
Why
in
is
the world.
Video that much better than just a phone call?
Nonverbal communication is huge. And it's very difficult sometimes in email or even on a phone call to know if somebody's actually getting what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary at first, you know, put yourself in the assistant's shoes. You're wanting to impress. You're wanting to get ahead of that leader and be proactive, but you can be intimidated to ask questions or clarify in the beginning. But if you're video chatting with somebody, you can tell, she did not get that. Yeah, she did. I need to hang out here for a minute and unpack this some more. So I think that nonverbal communication is huge. I think eye contact. I think seeing somebody's environment. I mean, the reason this works is because you're working with people and you're establishing relationships.
Right.
And for me, that's very hard to do just over the phone or just over email.
So what are some other pro tips to delegate effectively?
I think for me, it's delegate the why way more than the what or the how, because the types of people that we have are so good and we vet them so well that if you communicate the why, meaning, hey, you know, Jenny or whatever, this is why I need you to do this. What that does is that gives her the ability to fill in the blank when you're not around, because she has the end result. Mm-hmm. And if you were to say, here's the 87 things I need you to do, and never articulate the why, then at point 12, if they have a question, they have to come back to you. So the more you can communicate, this is why I need this to be done this way. And right. This is, it does wonderful things in building the relationship between the virtual assistant and the client. Another one too, for me, is over communicate. It seems obvious to me, but a lot of our clients in the early days, they need to be taught to over communicate and repeat themselves. And a lot of leaders don't like to do that. They like to just, why didn't you get it on the first time?
Well, they think they've said it. So now in their head, it's done.
Yeah. But
right?
Yeah.
And they're on to something else.
And so what we call that, we want them to break the threshold of communication so that, for example, let's say I'm your assistant and you're giving me some information. If you keep repeating it, there's this point in time where I go, okay, I got it. And you'll know that I got it because you'll see how I execute in that process. So over communication is a very, for both the virtual assistant and with the client, it's mm-hmm. a very big deal. And we teach that.
So now, part of your service, as I understand it, by having this kind of layer of an account manager, or what do you call them?
The relationship
manager mm-hmm. in between, then you're kind of helping train me to use your service effectively.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, we've had executives tell us, like C-level executives say, you know, I've had an assistant for 20 years and no one has ever taught me how to delegate and work with an assistant like you guys.
So now, going back to your point of this weekly check-in, mm-hmm. do you teach me how to create that agenda in order to make that weekly check-in effective? Because it's not only do I want to tell you, hey, I need these five things done, but don't I want to make sure that the five things from last week got done, and I need some sort of a feedback loop to make sure that we made progress or there was a challenge or something?
Yeah, definitely. And that's more important to some leaders than others. You know, some leaders want to just hand over an assignment or a task and be done. Like, I don't want to hear about it. Call me if there's a problem. But some leaders really need that assurance that, yes, this was completed and here's how it was completed. So in addition to that weekly check-in and, you know, structuring agenda will look different for every client. Some clients require, you know, a weekly progress report or, you know, a status at the end of the day on Friday of, here are all the things that I did this week. Here's what's still outstanding for next week. Here are my priorities. And that allows the leader to say, oh, something else has come up. Let's bump, you know, this down the list. And this is now your new priority for next week. And we call sometimes, you know, when we do our check-in calls, we call them calibration calls for that reason. Like, let's calibrate. Make sure we're all focusing on the same thing, and then right. we know exactly what needs to happen for, you know, the next week, next month.
So now we mentioned some of the tips for delegating. Is there any other tips you have? So we got the agenda call, the calibration. Mm-hmm. You got the why.
Mm-hmm. Over communicate. Yeah, and I think to just come with a fresh perspective on delegation, like how you've delegated. Or come with an open mind, I should say, because how you've delegated in the past isn't necessarily the right way to delegate in this capacity. So if you're willing to let us speak into your mind and with regard to delegation and be open-minded to it, it really does help the engagement move along.
Now, from the standpoint of the assistant, do you have any tips for a person that might want to consider being an assistant? Like,
responsiveness is huge, and coming with a servant mindset. You know, we're really here to serve the leaders that we're blessed with through our company. And so that can look different for every client, but still having that posture mm-hmm. of serving and, you know, being responsive and over communicative is huge. It's really the soft skills that matter the most. And it sounds cliche, but there are so many technology platforms out there, systems that clients use. You know, the technical skills are important, but almost not as important as those soft skills that we look for. So back to the point of the resume, it can look amazing and you right. can have experience in these 50 things. But if you're generally not nice to work with,
right, it doesn't matter.
No dice.
Or you really don't like to serve people,
right.
you know, then you're really not going to be a great virtual assistant.
So do you have any tips for how to identify a person that really has that service mindset? Do you have Or is that your secret sauce?
Yeah, that's a bit of our secret sauce. There are so
many
things.
It's hard to quantify.
Things. Yeah, there's so many things that we're looking for that our talent acquisition team looks at and our recruiters. I mean, mm-hmm. there are nonverbal things being communicated. There's how they come to a video interview. What do they look like? What's in the background? I mean, there's a ton of things we're paying attention to that they don't know.
Right. You may want to put the Jack Daniels bottle away.
Yeah, right. Take your bathrobe off and make sure you come for an interview.
And you sure you're checking their social media as well?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's all part of it. Nice. So now for people in 2016 who are thinking to go out on their own as entrepreneurs and maybe kind of take that leap, do you have any tips for them? Because you guys kind of took that leap yourself 6 years ago.
Don't try to do everything yourself. You know, and I'm not even advocating for an assistant because that may not be what a new business owner needs. But like in the beginning, when we started 5 years ago, one of the very first things we outsourced was our bookkeeping. Yeah. I was trying to do it, you know, we're flat broke bootstrapping this thing and I can get my way through finances, but it's not my gifting. It's not where my time should have been spent, but I was trying to save money and I learned QuickBooks and we got to a point very early on in our business where Brian said, honey, I love you. You're not doing this anymore. We're done. So we outsourced that right away and that freed me up to do the things that I was good at.
Right. All of a sudden now your mind had this more space to do things that you love and are good at rather than kind of dread and hate and then not looking forward to it.
And it took me four times as long
right. mm-hmm.
than it did the person we outsourced it to who could do this stuff in her sleep. So just conceptually, don't try to go it alone. Find the areas of the business that you can delegate or outsource to somebody else so that you can focus on what you're really good
right.
at.
And do what you do and then kind of delegate the rest.
Yeah. And I think too, for us, I mean, we have a mantra for our marriage and then for the businesses we actually own six companies and we decided early on to own things, not run things. And so that decision, that mantra informs how we empower our team and our leaders, what we expect from them. We want to own businesses, not run them. And we mm-hmm. want to empower those people. So I think a small business or someone starting off, they need to decide, do they want to run it or do they want to own it? Because it's two different mindsets for how you approach your business.
So now when you made that decision to own rather than run, how did you identify that person that could run it?
Well, we look for people that, you know, in a fast-growing company, the ones that are out there that are growing really quick, they have a tendency to promote from within. And that's a really smart move because the speed to get them into that new role is much quicker than pulling someone from the outside. And so we just looked for people who had passion and demonstrated leadership. And, you know, we've come alongside them as, you know, some of our businesses are baby businesses still, and then some are, you know, well-established like EA Help. And so we're at different life cycle stages with those companies. And so, you know, they're leaders that just evolve and, you know, those are the ones you really want to put to represent your organizations.
But when you say rather own than run, mm-hmm. at first you were running.
Absolutely.
At yeah. all six of them?
Well, the newest ones have happened in the last 18 months. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, EA Help and then another one called Mag Bookkeeping. You know, we're very intentional with those leaders to say, look, this is your business to run. This is what we expect from you. But early on, it was just us. I mean, we were, when I say just us, it was us leading and running them, but we were very intentional. We told them very clearly, we want to own things, and which means that at some point, we're going to step out of this. We're going to hold you accountable so you can run it. Mm-hmm. And we casted vision for them in that way.
And then how do you deal with that? How do you like get your feedback loop to make sure that they're doing what your vision is?
We track everything. We do. We track a lot of metrics. So we can see, you know, just from a numbers perspective, how we're progressing. But then we also have semi-annual corporate meetings where we bring our team all together. We have leadership meetings and leadership teams that have evolved in each company that don't have us
on
them.
So it's a trust but verify system.
Sure. And then we also have bi-weekly executive calls with the leaders of those businesses where we cover off the key areas of the business and work through problems together that need to be solved.
So it sounds like you have a similar setup that you have with EA where you have the check-in. So it's a similar model, except it's expanded to the business rather than a given project or a given client.
We practice what we preach.
Yeah. At every stage, it sounds like.
Well, and I don't, you know, Brian mentioned earlier that he had an assistant in Charlotte with his old company, right? That assistant is now the president of EA Help. So we started off very small with her supporting us for 5 hours a week in mm-hmm. our business right. to start EA Help. And over time, you know, she has the same passion for the business as we do. And she demonstrated leadership time and time again. And we could see in the numbers under her leadership, EA helped grow and grow and grow. So we just promoted her this year to president. So that's how powerful delegation and this mindset of owning and not running can be.
That's right.
Now, if somebody wants to learn more, EA Help, where do they go?
EAHelp.com.
And then the first step in the process is what? They go to the website.
Yeah, fill out a form for us to talk to you. We don't have our pricing on our website. We want to have a conversation with you first and make sure that what we offer is going to make sense for you as a prospect. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, move them through a proposal and a contract if they want. And then, like Shannon mentioned earlier, our implementation begins.
And that's the same for if they want to be EA helper. They would go
there. You can look at the job description and apply online.
Good stuff. Well, thank you both for being part of the show today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. All right.
All right. Remind our listeners, you're listening to Atlanta Business Radio on Business Radio X. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at Business Radio X, and we're using the hashtag Atlanta Business Radio. Also, our Facebook page, like there, leave your thoughts and comments and see all the photos of our wonderful in-studio guests. And now, without further ado, we have two wonderful guests in the studio joining us, Dr. Christopher Chase Carey and his remarkable success story and student, Kelly Lynn. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having us. I'm not a doctor.
You're not a doctor?
Not a doctor. I just call everybody doctor.
I understand.
I want people to feel good about
it. I wanted to throw some love back to you.
I'll take the love.
Okay.
I'll take the
love. Sir.
But not the credential.
Not the credential. That's right.
All right. Chase and Meditation, your first book?
It is my first book.
So how was that book writing process?
The book writing process is really wonderful because...
You had an assistant?
I did not have an assistant, but boy,
I bet they have one that could help you with your second book.
I bet they do, and they're looking right at me.
So talk a little bit about the book.
The book really started out as a handout for my professional meditation training classes. Meditation is not really well defined in the West. And even in the East, it's still kind of, I don't want to say touchy-feely, but there's nobody that's really put, step one, step two, step three, which I've done. I think that's in chapter four. So I really wrote it for professionals that wanted to get all the benefits from meditation, but have it demystified. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell people, I don't want you to change jobs, change religions, or change spouses. I simply want you to improve your life.
And then what are some ways that meditation improves your life?
Meditation improves your life in a number of ways. First off, I like to tell professionals, if you want to be an Olympic athlete, go to the gym. If you want to be a mastermind in your profession, meditate. If you want to be crushed by your competition, do nothing.
So now how does meditate help me crush my competition?
It really brings you into your core talents and moves away all the static and noise from society and all the people sucking your time. In fact, Lee, let me start out with my meditation bell because the bell, see if I can do this, always starts off and ends a meditation period. And not only does it set the mood, but it sets the intention that this is me time. Mm-hmm. You're a professional. You're an entrepreneur. You work like a dog. Nobody in the corporate world will ever understand how hard it is. So this is me time, and we're going to use it to not only make you feel better, but do better.
So now, how much time does meditation take?
It can take from 10 minutes a day to 20 minutes a day. I personally meditate about an hour a day.
In a row?
Yes, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Now, 60 minutes in a row?
Yes, yes, yes. Now, I do have, I can use the Monroe Institute patented audio technology to keep you in that deep meditative state. But I can teach you very easily with enough practice to be there. And the funny thing is, once you get over about the 3-week period, people will start their day with, I'm going to do this today. And they may let other things fall aside. Now, they're not going to leave their kids at school. They're not going to not stop at the grocery store. But they're going to say, you know, maybe I don't need to watch the presidential election repeat today. I'm just going to spend 20 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour for me time.
So now you recommend 10 minutes as a starting point?
Yes, I recommend starting. And for many people, 10 minutes is about the most they can do. The biggest challenge most of us have is quieting our mind.
Right.
And I have techniques to help people with that.
All right. What are some pro tips for quieting? Because I've tried to meditate a bunch of times throughout my life. And it just, as soon as I close my eyes, my mind is racing to a million different things.
I got to tell you, Lee, that's part of my secret sauce. But I'm going to ask Kelly, who is my star student,
all right,
on so some of the techniques she has used.
Kelly, welcome.
Thanks. Quiet the mind.
You've done that before?
Yeah. Chase was the one that taught a workshop that exposed to me this the tones that were introduced by the Monroe Institute, which are a scientific discovery where different tones are introduced in each ear through headset or earbuds. And the tones automatically put you in a meditative state. And mm-hmm. those are what I need in order to quiet the self-chatter.
So you couldn't do it like just cold turkey?
I can't. It's been so effective, though. It's been incredible.
Mm-hmm. For people that don't have access to that or are driving, I want them first to understand one of the most important skill sets for any entrepreneur is to be able to control the effect your thoughts have on you. One of the reasons that's so important is every single emotion we have, which tends to drive our activity, except for love, is based on a conclusion from a thought. Next step is understand that your brain's job is to create thoughts and to help you out. And those thoughts always convey meaning. But we don't have to assign any meaning to those thoughts unless that meaning helps us. You know, you see kind of the fluffy stuff where somebody comes home and their house is burned down by a lightning bolt and they say, okay, great, I never liked that house. Now I can have a big new house. Lee, I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but that is a good example of if you change the way a thought interfaces with you, you change the way you react to it. So the next step and the third step is really allow the thoughts to go by. You don't have to get on board with them. You don't have to tackle them. If you get caught up in it, simply focus back on your breathing. And that goes particularly if you're in a sales meeting and you've got some stress going on, you've got some conflict going on, you have something that has to be done in a time spot, focus on your breath. That's the number one thing that will pull people away from their thoughts.
Now, I exercise a lot and I take classes. And one of the things the teachers tend to talk about is breathing. Can you share, like, breathing isn't just like in and out. There's a way to breathe properly, right, to get the most benefit?
Absolutely. And breathing is...
And it's deeper than you think it is. Most people breathe too shallow. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And that is... That's a critical misstep we've made. If we take time and focus on our breath, and sometimes there are specific patterns of you breathe in, you hold, you breathe out in different ratios, you can create different states of what I call an expanded state of awareness, which is really what meditation is. But I invite all your listeners, the next time they're under stress or they have conflict, simply focus on their breath. That will naturally shallow people's breath a bit, and they'll tend to breathe. They'll slow down their breath.
Right.
And it will tend to get deeper. You do that three or four times, bam, you're in control.
Now, can you... Because most people think that they breathe fine. Now, can you share like the amount of time for an inhale as opposed to an exhale?
Yeah, I like to do about 3 seconds on the inhale. I like to hold for about 3 seconds, and I like to have people release for about 3 seconds.
Right. So one in and out breath is 9 seconds.
Yes.
Which is a longer time than you think it is.
It's a much longer time than you think it is. And if you're performing surgery, that probably works really well. If you're talking on the phone, handling customers, that may not work so well. People will naturally then gravitate to doing 5 seconds, which will enhance and accelerate how fast.
A 5 second inhale?
A 5 second inhale. Try it. A 5 second
hold. That's a long time.
It is. But one of the beautiful things is you can't think about anything other than
breathing in for 5 seconds.
Right.
Because you got to count to five.
Right. Now, of course, snorkelers and scuba divers are pretty good at this because air is limited.
Right. Being underwater helps, right?
Being with this. Hey, we should write that down. I like that underwater training.
I did want to add something regarding the noise in your head. There's also a technique of having a mantra where you're constantly saying that mantra. So you're making that
You're distracting
voice.
Your
distract. Right? Yeah. So I like to use let go. let go.
So it doesn't have to be like kind of a just a nonsensical syllable or something. You can actually have a phrase. Do you recommend so many syllables for the phrase?
The one I recommend with folks is something called hum saw. It's not spelled quite that way. I believe it means that I am or something similar to that. Wayne Dyer has a CD and a new book out that talks about similar things. It tends to be more effective for people if the sound or what they're saying doesn't have an immediate meaning. So imagine if we repeat it in our minds as we meditate, IRS, IRS, IRS. Or terrorist, terrorist.
Right, that wouldn't be good.
It's not going to work.
Right.
So you focus on something that doesn't necessarily have meaning. And when you get distracted on that thought, you just come back to the hum, saw, hum, saw, hum, saw. In fact, transcendental meditation is actually a branded form of this, which is called a silent mantra meditation.
Now, do you find that most people, the self-talk in their head is more negative than positive?
Absolutely. They say, scientists say that we have between 50 and 60,000 thoughts a day, almost none of them true, almost all of them creating fear. Now, for women, that's 50 or 60,000 different thoughts. For guys, it's one thought, 50 or 60,000 times. Come on, you know it.
Yes.
And does that come true? Not nearly as often as we say.
So now, doing meditation, does that kind of lower that number, that 50 to 60,000 thought number?
It not only lowers it, but it teaches you to be able to reduce it when it starts to creep up and to be able to, I don't want to quite say ignore, I don't want to put that much force into it, but when a thought comes in, just kind of let it go.
Because a lot of times people go to kind of a worst case scenario thought. Whatever, oh, something.
Right. But the reality is the
that
worst.
It never happens.
Thank you. Do you ever predict when you're going to get cancer, when you're going to get run over by a bus, when a plane's going to fall into your house?
Right. Well, that's what I find is that you think or you read something and you're like, oh, that's me. I have that symptom. You know, the WebMD kind of thing. You're like, oh, that's me. And then.
That's my wife. Right? She's banned from WebMD.
So then you like kind of go to worst case scenario. But then you get distracted by another one of those 50,000 thoughts, and then you forgot about it. But your stress level probably at the time you were thinking about it probably goes through the roof.
Right. But when you practice meditation, a couple of things will happen. Number one, you'll learn to get back to that silent mantra or that natural space mm-hmm. right away. Your stress reaction will be much less because you'll have a clearer understanding. You know, meditation really does three primary things for people, and we tend to focus on accelerating change. You need a foundation of deep relaxation and stress release and stress endurance. Let's face it, we all tend to be better at what we do when we have some amount of stress. If we're sitting on a beach in Hawaii, and I'm so dying for my neck workshop to be there, you don't really feel time pressure. The other is you can learn to problem solve like child's play.
Oh, I'd love to speak to that.
Please do.
As a budding entrepreneur, there are times, of course, when you're trying to grow your business and intangibly things stall. And you're like, why is this not getting to the next right. level? And I've been able to take moments like that in my business growth and focus on having the intent to try to figure out what the obstacles are to move forward. And I think it's the higher consciousness of your mind that knows stuff, but sometimes it's covered with chaos of right. the day-to-day. And it clears away that chaos, and the definitive plan of action comes through. And it's been absolutely miraculous as far as defining issues, complexities that are roadblocks, and coming up with solutions to them in my business career.
Now, I'm sure everybody's read a ton of stuff that meditation's important. I mean, there's so many things that encourage people to meditate, but I would imagine that the vast majority of people don't.
The vast majority of people don't yet.
Right, because they haven't read the book.
Well, yes, absolutely. They haven't read the book, particularly chapter 4. Chapter 9 is where it goes out.
But the thing, the point I'm trying to make is that, I mean, I know I've tried to do it. I understand intellectually that it's important and it makes perfect sense. And it's only 10 minutes in the course of a day. It seems like it's so simple to do. But when you start doing it, it's just harder than you think.
It is. And you're constantly questioning yourself, are you doing it right?
Doing it right. Right.
But nobody's ever going to grade your meditation.
Well, you're because everybody goes to kind of worst case scenario, and then all these negative thoughts, you think you're doing it wrong. So you're like, why bother doing this?
Exactly. And that's where professional training really comes in, because meditation is not a soft science. I mean, there are puff meditation teachers out there, and I love them to death. I say that respectively, but I really focus on professionals who want to super perform in life. And they do that by professional training. In order for you to improve your life in whatever matter it is, you have to change the way you think, and you have to change your understanding of things. And the quickest, fastest, most concrete way to do that is to meditate.
Now, but you're saying I need a meditation coach?
A meditation coach, a meditation trainer. Yeah, let me give you my price list, Lee.
So what, you're going to stand next to me as I have my eyes closed and sitting cross-legged in my living room?
Well, maybe not your living room, but certainly at corporate sites and event sites. But yes, my training, I'm one-on-one, and I walk people through it. And I help them. Here's what you do now. I observe you. I'm not looking at you like a hawk. And you share your experiences with me. You will learn when you meditate enough to be able to have a conversation with a trainer, helping you to understand what's going on.
So if I'm investing in a trainer to accelerate my compliance with meditation,
yeah,
because this is the gift that keeps on giving, right? If I learn how to do this right, in how long does a typical training take for me to be so that I'll do it as a habit?
6 sessions, probably over 6 to 12 weeks. If you do your homework in between.
Right.
Meditation, oddly enough, is probably the easiest thing you'll ever do, the simplest thing you'll ever do, but it's challenging because we need to shut off our mind and we need to focus on our breath.
So if I invest in 6 sessions over, 3 or 4 months, I'll be good at it enough that I'll stick with it now.
If you do the homework in between, because you'll get to the point where you won't want to miss it. You'll understand.
Right. No, it becomes a non-negotiable priority in my life. And that's the problem. Most people don't make it non-negotiable.
Right.
They work. Oh, I'll get to it later. I'll get to it later. Oh, guess what? The day's over and I didn't do it.
Right. So you look at somebody that's fit and you say, do you go to the gym? I don't really need to. You look at somebody that doesn't meditate and you say, would you like to meditate? They're like, no, my life's fine. They don't realize how much better it could be.
Right.
If they do the practice.
Go ahead.
I like to build it into the very first thing I do in the morning. I'm laying in bed. The alarm goes off. Before I even get out of bed, I meditate. And I meditate for 45 minutes, between 40 and 45 minutes every morning before I even get out of
down?
Bed. I do. I like to lay down.
So walk us through what your meditation process is. Do you mind sharing?
Not at all. My alarm goes off at 6:30 in the morning. I've got to get my kids up at 7:15. And I pick up my iPad.
You have a bell?
I don't have a bell. I pick up my iPad. I put in my earplugs and I play the 45-minute Monroe Institute CD that is a guided meditation that's 45 minutes in, some free flow for you to kind of make your intention to whatever you might want to problem solve or.
And it's the same exact thing every day?
It is for me. Doesn't have to be for others, but it is for me. Yeah.
So it's one 45-minute session that you just repeat every single day?
Every single day.
While lying down in your bed?
Before I even get out of bed. Yep. And it literally sets the pace for how relaxed I'm going to be. And when crises come up in the middle of the day, I'm telling you, it makes all the difference in the world.
And then can you share maybe some of the where you've seen a benefit, where you can attribute it back to this, going through this process?
Sure. I'm growing a consulting business, and I wasn't reaching enough people because I had a great product, I guess is the best word to describe it. And I felt that was a roadblock. And so I said, I made it my intention during this one guided meditation to try to resolve what I needed to do to reach more people. And an absolute business plan was delivered to me. And it was without a question, because I trust the meditation process, I never questioned that plan. I implemented that plan, and 9 months later, a lucrative, profitable business plan that had never come to mind prior to that one particular session.
Now, can you share what it was like when you were first starting? Like, how did you battle through this kind of turbulence that's at the beginning that makes it so difficult to stick with this, though it's only a few minutes?
Yeah. I was first introduced to it by Oprah and Deepak Chopra. They every, say, maybe 3 or 4 times a year, they offer a plan that you can get online.
Right.
And it's a 10-minute meditation, and it's a guided meditation. And one of my friends had said, let's do this together. Sure. So she committed to doing it, and I committed to doing it. And I was hooked like after 3 sessions. And they really? Were 10-minute sessions, and I was hooked.
And you were doing the same lay in your bed thing, or did you?
I was sitting up. Yeah. You don't have to sit cross-legged. Sure. If that's not comfortable for you, you can lay down. You can sit up. It's whatever.
But the key thing
most
is
relaxed.
To do it in a spot that's kind of comfortable, and you can do it in the same thing. You want to have some sort of routine to this and ritual, right?
And I think the guided meditations, like Chase offers, the guided meditations are really the best for people like me who are very high energy and can't quiet the voice in my head. Yeah. Because you're listening to somebody else and they're walking you through it.
Right. And then you can focus on that instead of the voices in your head.
Correct.
All right, Chase. So who is the person that you think needs this the most? Do you think it's an entrepreneur or business person that's got like 50 million things going on?
Somebody that's got 50 million things going on. Somebody that has resistance in their life, but they have the right resources and the right people, but they're not moving through it. I can help them break through that resistance. Somebody that wants to make sure they stay on top of their game.
Right. And then the best way to learn more, to get your book, you have a website?
ChasingMeditation.com.
Chase In or Chasing?
Actually, both.
Both.
My book is Chase In with an apostrophe meditation, and my website is ChasingMeditation.com. It is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
And in order to do this, you don't need a mantra necessarily, but you think that it's a good thing?
It's a good start. What I'd like people to do is, if they need to use a mantra, I will teach that to them, and that's, of course, in the book. But to move beyond that, because once you get into the complete quiet space, you can start to write your own script.
Right. And if you have a million things going on, a good mantra might be EA help.
Right. I like that. Let's all try that.
EA help.
Right.
EA help.
EA help. I like that.
See that? Everybody wins, right?
Everybody wins.
Maybe some of our EAs can teach meditation.
There you go.
Yeah.
Can I delegate my meditation to someone else?
No, you can't. Not yet.
That's something you have to do yourself. Yes. So sorry about that. That's a missed opportunity for you guys.
But I like the way you think. I like that.
Well, thank you all for being part of the show today. That was great. Brian, what'd you think?
Lee, great job as always. Fascinating subject matter. And I love how it all just resonates together there at the end for sure. So if your company is out there doing something interesting to generally serve your market, your community, and your profession, reach out to us directly on the contact page on the website at businessradiox.com. On behalf of the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Red Hawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.